The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bjorkman, Judge Bratfold, Judge Halbrooks, the Honorable Luis Dovre Bjorkman presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Tuesday, June 21st, 2022. We have one matter on our calendar for oral argument this morning. It is the State of Minnesota versus William Clyde Grunwald. Counsel, I know you're both familiar with our procedures, and even though we are proceeding by Zoom today, the procedures will be the same. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. The timing is indicated in the box on your screen. You should be able to see it. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are making an audio recording of this, so it is important that you identify yourself and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument. And because we have an official recording, no one is permitted to otherwise record this Zoom session. So with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, all of you. Good morning, Ms. Pippenhagen. My name is Dan Guerrero, and I represent Mr. Grunwald. I first want to apologize by not sending in my oral argument notice, and I appreciate the court's consideration in allowing us to appear today by Zoom. This is a sentencing appeal, and this court will review the district court's decision not to depart for an abuse of discretion. And, you know, I'm under no illusion that this is not a difficult case for me. The case law indicates it's a rare case that this court will reverse a district court for the imposition of a presumptive sentence. But I feel strongly about this case, and I felt that this is the rare or exceptional case where the district court did abuse its discretion in not departing. Mr. Grunwald was a 65-year-old man with a myriad of health concerns. Was essentially entirely dependent on his wife for his nutritional, medicinal, grooming, and exercise needs. And in 2028, he was found to have child pornography on his computer. More than a year later, he was charged. 2.5 years later, he pled guilty to 5 counts. And then more than 3 years later, he was finally sentenced. He was given a 39-month prison sentence. In the meantime, since that discovery in November of 2018, he had undergone 2 psychosexual evaluations. At least one of those found that there was a large number of protective factors decreasing his risk of reoffense. And in fact, he had not reoffended in those 3 years. There was both psychosexual evaluations indicated that he was amenable to outpatient sex offender treatment. There was a pre-sentence report completed by a very experienced probation officer who also recommended a stayed sentence here and for with significant conditions that took into account public safety.
Mr. Guerrero, do you contend that the district court did not consider all of these circumstances that you contend are mitigating and should have supported a dispositional departure?
Well, she indicated at sentencing that she did review all those, and I take her word that she did consider everything that was submitted to her, Your Honor. Although she did indicate that that there was, after she said that, and in fact found him amenable to probation, given all the trog factors, I mean, she essentially said that on the record. She said, I don't think that that's what amenable means in the context of departing on a case, because there's also a component of public safety that is concerned. I don't know. I think perhaps that's part of her abuse of discretion in considering the public safety component as it related to Mr. Grunwald himself, looking at him individually for his particular amenability. And in fact, the psychosexual evaluations, as I mentioned, did find him a low risk to offend. He had started treatment in an individual setting. And though it was progressing perhaps slower than the district court would have liked, it was progressing. And he had significant depression, other mental health issues that they were focusing on. But his therapist thought that eventually they would be able to deal effectively with the child pornography offense and the issues that underlying issues that led to that offense.
Mr. Guerrero, here's my primary concern in evaluating whether or not this was abuse of discretion. The district court, and I think it's Dr. Thompson with whom he's treating now, correct?
Correct.
Individually, you know, and Dr. Thompson seemed to say that, you know, they were making some progress, but they had been in working together for at least 8 months, and they were still not even, in Dr. Thompson's assessment, close, I'm paraphrasing here, but close to getting to the real issues that were underlying, these pleas. He does have a complex presenting problem with depression and so forth, but it seemed like it was going to be a extremely long period of time, if ever they would get to the issues that were underlying this. So the district court in its order, and this is, you know, picked up in respondent's brief on page 6, but it says, you know, that it's more than attending treatment as ordered, but the ability, the willingness, the cognitive and emotional and mental health ability to get better, to fully engage in the process, to actually absorb treatment, make a meaningful change. And there is certainly evidence in this record that Mr. Grunwald, if not minimizes the impact of his behavior on victims, really doesn't grasp the magnitude of this. So that seemed to me to be a really significant concern for the court. Could you respond to that?
I agree that it did appear to be a concern of hers. But again, I think these things take time. And I think given more time, and of course, she could have placed him on probation for, I believe, up to 20 years. I can't recall the maximum amount, but obviously that was part of the recommendations that the probation officer made, in that we can have these protective conditions set forth to make sure that he does eventually grasp and have. Do we know that he would ever have the mental capacity? I don't know. I would hope so. I think Dr. Thompson is a very respected person in the sex offender community, and perhaps he could have helped him on along with that. Your Honor, I would just suggest that there needed to be more time, and I think if the court would have given him that more time, both he and frankly the public would have been better served, because he goes into prison, right, and he spends 24 months there and he's out untreated. And then it's up to him, rather than a court-ordered court-ordered sentence, as to whether or not he continues with treatment. It's a hard thing to know for sure in terms of his ability to grasp. But I think Dr. Thompson was on the right track, and I think only time would have been able to give him more of an opportunity to show both himself and the court whether he's progressing significantly. Eventually, he would have had to successfully completed the program. Otherwise, he would have been in violation of his sentence and ultimately could have been sentenced to prison as a result.
Mr. Guerrero, one of the points you make in your briefing is that your client is particularly unamenable to incarceration. Do you contend that that's a valid departure ground?
I do. And I think there's language in the Trog decision that would suggest that that's a valid ground.
And I've looked at Trog, and I'm looking for what language you're referring to.
Well, I apologize. I don't have it right at the tip of my fingers, but I believe I did quote in my brief language in quotations that despite that the trial court recognized that both the defendant and society would be better off if the defendant was given treatment and supervised on probation because he was particularly unamenable to prison. And I do think that you know, the trog factors are not exclusive. Even the factors set forth in the guidelines are non-exclusive. So I do think that would be a legitimate factor for the court to consider to determine the person's amenability to probation. Those factors provide, quote, a useful framework, but there's more to consider. And certainly if one is to consider Mr. Grunwald, he was not a particularly good candidate for prison. And I know I mentioned what happened after he went in, and obviously that's beyond the record, so I don't know that I want to get into it, but he has not fared well in prison. I should mention that he has been moved from Oak Park Heights to Faribault now. So he is now in Faribault under similar care, individual care.
So Mr. Guerra, I'd like to just a couple of things. First of all, I appreciate your candor today and how you describe the record and your sincere effort on behalf of Mr. Grunwald. It is a really difficult case. And the district court said that before she proceeded with her reasons for denying your motion to depart. And obviously I appreciate you acknowledging that the district court considered all of this evidence and the law that applies in this case. And, you know, in particular, going back to the questions about amenability to probation, the judge does articulate a pretty very thoughtful analysis of what is amenability, and that it would also include this public safety risk analysis. And I hear you, and I could, you know, find it persuasive in my own, were I a district court judge, but that's not the seat I'm in. You know, I'm an appellate judge, and this determination of an abuse of discretion in this area is very difficult, because everything you say, as persuasive as it is, you're asking this court to reweigh, as we've said, the evidence in a difficult, difficult case. So I guess I want to give you a chance to articulate an abuse of discretion that would fit better for our framework, you know, whether it would be a legal error or where the judge has so completely overlooked something. And I'm not seeing that in this record. I just want to be direct with you. So if you do, I would appreciate hearing from you on that.
Well, that's why I acknowledged at the beginning, Your Honor. And I think myself and my law clerk found maybe one case where an appellate court reversed a district court for abuse of discretion and not departing. I would just say that, you know, in my plus 30 years of representing clients, I've really never seen where I've gotten two psychosexual evaluations recommend an amenability to treatment and probation, as well as a probation officer to do so as well. And I fully acknowledge that the district court has great discretion, and I know it would be difficult for this court to just say, well, you know, me sitting in that position may have made a different decision, but she decided, despite all of this and the fact that herself said on the record that he was amenable to probation, to send him to prison. And I guess that's enough, but I would certainly indicate that for what purpose? Certainly not to foster what was essential to Mr. Grunwald's physical and mental health, and really of no equal benefit to public safety. And so I think when the court weighs those two things, perhaps you could make a finding that the district court abused its discretion. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors, Mr. Guerrero. My name is Heather Pipenhagen, and I am an assistant Dakota County attorney here today on behalf of the respondent, which is the state of Minnesota. The court has already pointed out some of the points I was going to make, so frankly, I will keep this brief. This is simply not the rare case where this court should reverse the district court's imposition of a guideline sentence. The district court in this case, as we've already noted today, considered appellant's circumstances, considered the guidelines, considered the case law, and issued a thoughtful decision, and determined that appellant in this case, frankly, is not the atypical offender as required by Soto, an atypical offender, the star defendant, who is particularly amenable to treatment. And Soto made it clear, it's not just amenable to treatment. It has to be an atypical offender who's particularly amenable to treatment. And the judge found this was not the case where the guidelines should be set aside. And in fact, frankly, appellant is very much the typical child pornography offender, with the exception that admittedly, he may be a little older in age than average, and may have some medical issues that other offenders don't have. But the information before—
Let me just stop you for a moment. I mean, I also, it is not the typical case in my experience that you have multiple mental health professionals and probation officers unanimously saying this person should not be in prison. They are amenable to treatment in a therapeutic setting and probation. Why shouldn't we view this district court's decision with some degree of skepticism?
This is why. What we had in this case, it's correct. We had two psychosexual evaluations and then a pre-sentence investigation. The only one of those evaluations that is geared towards a sentencing recommendation, and we need to keep this very clear, that would be the pre-sentence investigation that was done by Millie Godding. Absolutely correct. Millie Godding did recommend a stayed sentence, a departure from the guidelines. The psychosexual evaluations, those are done by psychologists in all of these cases. The purpose of that evaluation is a treatment recommendation. It's very important to keep it clear. The psychosexual evaluations, they are not ordered and they are not geared to provide a sentencing recommendation as far as the guidelines go. They say he is amenable to treatment, but we see that, you know, I mean, I'm sure this court has read thousands of psychosexual evaluations, and I think you can probably count on one hand where you got to the end of one and it didn't say amenable to treatment. The question is he particularly amenable to treatment in a probationary setting? And that's what the judge was addressing and saying, not in this case. His own therapist has said, look, this is going to be a really long road. And we're talking about leaving him in the community when his own therapist is saying, I don't know how long it's going to be before I can even address the issues underlying the offense behavior. And I want to leap right from that, unless there's follow-up on that, to correct one thing that Mr. Guerrero said. Mr. Guerrero said, he goes to treatment, he doesn't get any treatment, or he goes to prison, he doesn't get any treatment. And then when he gets out, it's on him to go to treatment if he wants. That's actually not correct. Had he been on probation, he would have been on probation for, I believe, 5 years and would have been required to complete treatment. Because he went to prison, he may not be there long enough to participate in the prison sex offender program. Unfortunately, we do sometimes see that with these really short sentences. However, he can fully take advantage of any mental health programming or any therapy that he wants to participate in while he's in prison. And when he is released, he will be on supervised release, and he will also be, because of this offense, on conditional release for a period of 5 years. And these types of offenders are required as a condition of that conditional release to complete sex offender treatment. So he will come out under supervision, be required to complete treatment. So that issue will be addressed. What I think we all hope is that perhaps he can address some of his mental health issues in the safe environment of the security of the Department of Corrections, where we don't have to worry about any more offending behavior. Now, as I think this panel's even noted, there could be a whole bunch of judges that would preside over this case at sentencing and may disagree on the outcome. But as has been noted, this set of judges has to decide, did this judge abuse her discretion?
And Mr. Guerrero, one of the points Mr. Guerrero made in his argument was to emphasize the length of time between when these issues were brought to law enforcement's attention and when sentencing occurred. It was about 3 years, as I recall, and no indication of any reoffense during that time period. Mr. Guerrero argues that suggests that the district court made some clear error in its findings with respect to, or abused its discretion in its findings with respect to public safety. How do you respond to that period of no reoffense when he is out in the community?
I am always very cautious about that argument for a few reasons. First of all, a lag in the offense, getting from the offense time to sentencing is certainly, what we know about the processing time in the criminal justice system, particularly now, and almost always in these kinds of cases where it requires computer forensic analysis, this is not unusual to have this period of time. And so that is certainly not a basis to say, well, it took us a couple of years to get to sentencing, so therefore it's not fair for him to get a presumptive guideline sentence. I mean, we're looking at a backlog in the system right now like we have never seen.
Well, and I don't think that was the argument. I think the argument was, look, he didn't reoffend during that period. And the fact that he didn't suggest that this, that the public safety analysis it is not sound.
And I think, again, that argument can be made every single time you have a defendant that gets to sentencing and hasn't been convicted of a new crime in between the time of the offense and the sentencing. We, frankly, other than Mr. Guerrero or the appellant's representation that he hasn't reoffended, we don't really know. What we know is that this appellant was committing this offense for we don't know how many years, completely undetected. So I don't know how you can ever say with certainty that he hasn't reoffended in between the time of his offense and sentencing. I don't know how you can ever really say that about any defendant unless you have a conviction in front of you in between the time of the offense and the sentencing. I just would really caution any thought process that because we didn't get a new conviction before he was sentenced, that means there's no public safety risk here. I think there's some real problems with that argument, and I would be concerned about that.
Ms. Pippenhagen, if I can follow up. So you're saying that there's no evidence to support Mr. Guerrero's position that there was no reoffense. So I'm curious, how do you look at the record that supports the district court's finding that there is a public safety risk? So what do you see as evidence? I read your brief carefully, yep. And I see that you poked holes at the analysis that was included in one of the psychosex evals about the potential for reoffense. And part of that is like your lack of data, right? We don't really have great data on reoffense or a great way to monitor reoffense. But what about the converse? Because our district court judge definitely, you know, tipped the scales on amenability, particular amenability based on a public safety risk. So what's the record evidence that supports that?
I think you have, anytime you have a defendant who satisfies the criteria of a pedophile, admits being sexually attracted to children, I think there's an absolute inherent public safety risk. And I believe one of the evaluations, I believe it was Ms. Carlson's evaluation, did actually point that out, that he was a public safety risk because of his attraction to children. He was a public safety risk with these victims. I'm almost positive it was Ms. Carlson's psychosexual evaluation. I think I quoted it in my brief. I think it's just inherent with all sex offenses, or a child pornography where we have a diagnosis of pedophilia or an admitted attraction to children, you have a public safety risk.
Ms. Pipenick, so did the district court err in her in the court's analysis of the evidence by focusing on that generalized view of Mr. Grunewald instead of making a particularity analysis as you have encouraged us?
I just need to ask the question because I'm hearing you argue it and I'm like, wait a second.
Sure. You told me that our district court judge made a particular analysis in this case.
I think the particular analysis had to do with the progress he individually was making in treatment. That was what was particularized and specific to this case. Not that he was a particular risk. I think that's different. But what really Mr. Guerrero is asking you to do in a way is second guess the legislature and the guidelines. So the legislature has said possession of child pornography is a felony offense and it's going to carry a prison sentence. And then the guidelines have said, if you have this many points, you go to prison. There's certainly nothing that says, well, but only if there's some additional reason for us to think you're a public safety risk. I mean, the guidelines have established the presumptive penalty for the offense. The judge followed the guidelines. And I mean, if you really follow Mr. Guerrero's argument through, I think what he's saying is, well, you know, we don't really know that these offenders are a public safety risk. Perhaps they don't really need to go to prison. And it is certainly reasonable to impose a probationary sentence instead of a prison sentence. And there's certainly nothing that requires in order to get a guideline sentence for us to prove that there's been an offense against a child or that there could be a future offense against the child. The guidelines apply regardless because of the offense of conviction. So again, judges can disagree. Any judges presiding over this case could disagree. But really the question is, did this judge abuse her discretion? And Mr. Guerrero, I think kind of, he said in response to a question, is appellant able to be treated? Is he able to get better? I hope so. Think about that statement. I hope so. Is I hope so a sufficient basis for this court to find that the district court judge abused her discretion? It's not. The judge certainly exercised proper discretion. And again, the psychosexual evaluation, one more correction, and I think I sort of already addressed that. The psychosexual evaluation commented that he was amenable to treatment. It did not, and it's just a matter maybe of semantics, but to correct Mr. Guerrero, said the psychosexual evaluation recommended probation. It certainly didn't. The psychosexual evaluation doesn't do that. But I do agree that the pre-sentence investigation did have a recommendation for a state sentence.
So one of the grounds for the probation officer's recommendation of a state sentence was Mr. Grunewald's lack of criminal history. And that is a topic that is not discussed in the district court's comments, along with his remorse for his cooperation. Now you, in your own brief, I appreciate your candor. You were very acknowledging that Mr. Grunewald certainly has cooperated with the court. And I think you said been respectful as any litigant should be. But going back to, you know, criminal history, remorse, and you have a different take on remorse. But we just don't have a finding from the district court judge, which is interesting. So would you comment on how the case law would have us look at that? Is that an abuse of discretion when it's a reason that's given by a seasoned probation officer?
And I have nothing but respect for Ms. Gotting. And I don't think the judge is bound by her opinion. I appreciate her recommendation. As far as the trog factors, it's always been interesting and a bit troubling to me that criminal history is included in that, because we have a sentencing guideline system now that already accounts for that. So I really never know how to deal with that when we're talking about the trog factors, because it's already counted. But that argument's been made, it remains in the trog factors. And so I don't put a ton of weight on Ms. Gotting's finding that that's a basis to depart.
Well, let me just make a quick suggestion to you. Doesn't it have something to do with this public safety risk that we're all talking about? Okay.
Correct.
I mean, right. I don't think it's that hard to understand why the Trump case recognizes that a district court judge should consider criminal history, as well as how sentencing works. You know, we have this unique scenario of multiple offenses on different dates in a series of convictions that then put Mr. Grunwald in the spot where he is a presumptive commit after the multiple convictions, right?
And
I understand, you know, nobody's alleging any error here. I'm not suggesting otherwise in the way in which Mr. Grunwald was sentenced. But, you know, I think you've been a prosecutor a long time, and I have not. So I see this in as to why Trog suggests that it is appropriate for a district court judge to look at criminal history.
And the important thing about Trog is, again, a non-exclusive list of things, kind of a guideline for the court to look at. But the whole point of that analysis of those factors is to make a determination on particular amenability to probation. So the court, whether or not it did or didn't address every single one of the Trog factors, it certainly made the finding on the particular amenability to probation based on the facts that were in the record. And that particular amenability to probation was the important finding. She certainly, I'm sure, considered all of the other circumstances in the case, but his real, I think, difficulty in progressing in treatment really tipped it for her. And I see I'm out of time, so I'll be quiet.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Guerrero, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Well, I appreciate listening to the court's questions and now recognize what you have to consider in this case in terms of what the district court did and didn't do. And I would have liked also to see her discuss a little bit more about my client's age or lack of prior record, his remorse, because I do think he made an appropriate statement of remorse at the time of his allocution and his cooperation with law enforcement. You know, treatment takes time. Most of these sex offender treatment programs are 24 to 48 months, if not longer. I'm sorry, 24 to 36 months, if not longer. And so the fact that he was treating for 8 or 9 months, and that seemed to be the basis for the court's denial of the departure, and that he wasn't making significant progress fast enough. But I do agree that the public safety determination that the trial court made here was not supported by any facts in the record, except the generality that the court indicated. We're not asking this court to second guess the guidelines here. We're asking the court to make a determination that the district court abused its discretion by making an improper public safety analysis and weighing that against what she clearly found to be his amenability to treatment and probation. And I know it's a difficult case, again, but the fact that he didn't reoffend for 3 years, and I know you have to take his word on that, but obviously all his computers were seized. I believe they're still in the property of the sheriff's department or the police department. There's no evidence that he would have any access to be able to reoffend. And in that 3 years, his health did significantly decline. I think the court erred in her determination of a public safety risk, and as a result, abused her discretion. In addition to the other things I've stated. Thank you. And I do appreciate the court's really considered judgment of this case and understanding the difficulties inherent in it.
Thank you, Mr. Guerrero. And thank you, Ms. Pipenhagen. We appreciate the arguments today in this challenging case. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you.
Thank you.